with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to this station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you are the man. You are the man on the story. We know that the Bears will be converging at Halas Hall again today, and they will be speaking to the media. And apparently, we will not hear from Caleb Williams. Do you feel that he should appear just to sort of, I guess, debunk the stories of him not wanting to be here or any of the I mean, it's yesterday's news. But the bit about him being sent to watch tape alone was a little bit interesting. Does he need to speak to that? He certainly will be asked of it when he next speaks. Or are you good with him not addressing it and the team kind of trying to bury it or ignore it?
Well, I think it's there are fair questions about it for Caleb. I think there's fair questions about it for Ben Johnson. And if Caleb doesn't talk today, which I don't think that's the plan, but plans do shift. Well, who knows? It'll be a topic again whenever Caleb does talk, if that's next month during mini camp or you know, whatever. So things don't go away. That was certainly a method that Bears PR tried to use in the past, that if you just try to ignore it and stick your head in the sand, maybe everything will go away. But they haven't been that way regularly and more recently, and we'll just see what goes on with this. I don't think it's a huge deal, but it's the quarterback and it's drama, and it's a quarterback that's going to need to have a better season.
Brad, regardless of how they handle the situation publicly and whether you want to call this a PR crisis for Caleb Williams or not, privately, are the Bears concerned about his game review habits, his film watching habits, and his need to maybe not watch film alone or know what he's looking when he does do that?
I think he's got to be better at everything he does in year two. Like, whatever he did in year one wasn't good enough. And if you've played at Oklahoma and played at USC and won a Heisman Trophy, you got to have some level of expertise watching film, I would imagine, right? Unless you were going out and just winging it on, great physical tools and skills that you do have. So he's going to have to work harder than he's ever worked for Ben Johnson, I would think. And there's varying opinions about film work and habits of his rookie season for sure that are out there.
I'm curious, Brad, has that process already begun with the head coach? Has Ben Johnson already, he at the opening news conference, he talked about how the signal caller needs to have the same understanding of the game as the play caller. They need to be in unison, and the way to do that is by watching tape together. Have they already started that process? Has he watched tape with them, evaluated how he breaks down tape? Does he know whether there's a hole in his understanding of how to break down tape? I'm doubtful that exists. I'm just curious if they have started that, what he mentioned on the first day of his news conference.
I'd imagine there's a very good chance that Ben Johnson spent some time in the quarterback room since the offseason program started. And when you're talking about introducing a roster to a new offense, there's got to be film work involved. So is that specifically looking at a lot of tape at Caleb? I don't know. That might not be the case, but if you're watching film, you're watching film. It doesn't matter who's taking the snap. So I would think that they've been doing some of that. A good deal is they try to wrap their arms around a new offense.
Bottom line, Brad, you've been there a long time. You know what is important and what isn't. How big of a news story, how big of a deal is all this?
It's just a little bit of drama, really. This isn't going to matter if Caleb Williams goes out and is outplayed again by Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and Bo Nix. Okay, it's not going to matter. It's going to be that he didn't play well enough, right? If he goes out and plays well and shows a huge jump in year two, it's not going to matter. But it's May, and it's a little bit of drama, right? You got a guy, how can we circumvent the draft? Which, have at it, and he's not the first guy that's had questions about that. There's no chance he's the last guy that's had questions about that. And here, the reality is, it's the Chicago Bears. What quarterback would want to join the Bears? It's every criticism of the Bears in the quarterback position for the last, 75 years, guys, is probably fair game. It really is.
75 years.
So, yeah, I it's like, of course you wouldn't want your son to go to Hallis Hall. If the Bears take offense to that, well, check out your track record for, since what was it? They've been bad at quarterbacks since Eisenhower was president, right?
What offended me about the whole thing, I can't get over, is saying that this is where quarterbacks go to die. This is where receivers go to die.
Yeah,
I thought we had decided that.
Exactly, and if you're gonna borrow from Mohsen Mohamed, you got to give the guy a little bit of credit, right?
Yeah,
and you got to
don't plagiarize. Exactly. Yeah. Right. All right, Brad. So things that do matter. The Bears extended Joe Tooney yesterday. Thought that was good job getting the numbers, a good guarantee for a guy at this stage of his career. We know what he means to that offensive line. The question is, how would you explain or how impressed were you they were able to configure the salary cap so there's a savings with Joe Tooney next year? And what will that money ideally be used for if they are going to use that space?
Well, in terms of configuring it, they were just picking up the final year of that deal from the Chiefs, so any bonus money that the Chiefs had paid him that was in their cap, that doesn't get transferred over. So the Bears were just picking up the base salary, which was high, and an off workout bonus because it's the last year of the deal. So it was at $16 million. They were able to he was going to earn $16 million in cash this year from the Bears, and therefore have a cap hit of $16 million. They were able to cut that in half. How exactly the numbers play out to get to a cap hit of $8 million for him this season, I haven't seen that yet, but I wouldn't necessarily draw the connection between a two-year contract extension for Joe Tooney and more shopping items for Ryan Poles and the Bears. Going into yesterday, guys, they were about as snug as any team in the league against the cap. They were, I think, if you look at overthecap.com, they were 29th in available cap space. So I think this $8 million that's created, as much as anything, will be for operating space for the 2025 season, for moves in season. They may have another move where they tweak a contract to clear up a little bit of room. Does that mean they're not going to go out and get a running back? No, I think I've said with you guys on the show that you would expect at least one more running back in the mix before training camp, when the pads go on and these guys got to start hitting and people need breaks, and there's going to be, you know, some ouchies for running backs. You see them go down every summer. No, I'm not saying that there won't be space to get a running back, but I think by and large, this is a cap savings that helps them do what they were going to need to do, which was create some little bit of room, flexibility, and operating space for the season ahead.
Are the Bears a running back short? Did we learn that? Did they try to make a trade up to draft a running back and kind of they were interested in Trevion Henderson, according to the
Forged in Foxborough.
Forged in Foxborough.
The Patriots behind the scenes video.
Yeah.
They we'll determine if they're a running back short, right? Like, would they have liked to have come out of the draft with a back before Kyle Manunga in round 7? Probably. But that doesn't mean they're not interested in seeing what he can do. And I also said if they do go out and bring in a running back, like, there's a competition for that playing time, for that opportunity there. You're looking at Swift, and then you've got Roschon Johnson, you've got Kyle Manungai, and then mystery man behind door number 3. Like, so we'll have to see. They're going to need to be better running the football. You would imagine it's going to be a shared backfield, and you just don't know who all will be in the competition, I think, when they get to training camp just yet.
So, Brad, do we know about attendance for key players for this voluntary OTA? I think they're still voluntary, right? It's not a mini camp.
The only thing that's mandatory is the 3-day mini camp next month.
So in that vein, because it is a new staff, do you feel like it is important for even the best players on this team or this defense to show up? And do you have any information or knowledge that some guys might not have?
No, I mean, the first one was yesterday, I believe. Maybe it was Monday. They opened up this week with OTAs, Dave. So we'll get a look. We'll get a peek today. I would imagine attendance will be high. I'd put even better, you know, like it's like minus 1,000 that the coach comes out and says he's fired up about participation in the OTA, right? Like that's a guarantee that that's going to happen. I know that Jalen Johnson has been there during voluntary off-season program this year. To what level, I don't know, but in the past, like, he's been a guy that hasn't volunteered a whole lot, which I think surprised him a little bit after he got paid, but he's been around. So we'll see what the attendance is like. I'm sure it'll be pretty good with guys interested in, you know, learning a new defense as well, right? We talk about learning the new offense. They got a new scheme on defense that they need to get down as well.
Are there any, we know the guys that are coming back from injury. Are there any new injuries? Anybody suffering anything that is unexpected? Do we know if there were surprise surgeries? You know, that happens.
Yeah,
in the offseason.
No surprise surgeries are the ones you really want to avoid, right? maybe they'll shed a little bit of light on that today. I think Ben Johnson is scheduled to speak, so if we do have injury questions, maybe we'll have the right guy there. I mean, most of these coaches now,
right?
They they feel they're at a competitive disadvantage if they talk about a guy's hamstring in May. So
yeah, what the offensive coordinator wouldn't answer a question about Luther Burden. They say, "Oh, you have to ask Ben that." Yeah, well, he talked yesterday. He's not available.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like Dick Durant said. That sounds like a real conundrum.
Brad, are you monitoring at all the Trey Hendrickson situation? Does it matter to the Bears? Should they be keeping an eye on that?
I don't think that's going to matter to the Bears. Like they've paid Montez Sweat, right? They traded for him. They paid him, and at the time they paid him, he was one of the higher paid edge rushers in the league. Like definitely top 10. Markets exploded a little bit. They went out and they paid Dio pretty darn good money in free agency. Trey Hendrickson's going to want a deal that if it's not at $30 million, or if it's not over $30 million a year, it's going to be right at it, right? In terms of the new contract that he's going to want. How do you fit that guy in? And then why did you go out and get Dio? And what would that say about what you think you're going to get from Montez Sweat going into, you know, his third year with you? It doesn't match up. I think if you feel like you're within striking distance of a Super Bowl and you're short at that position, that's a move that you consider. This is year one for Ben Johnson. We've talked about it before. I've written about it at length. Their inability to draft and develop pass rushers is a ongoing issue. Like, that's not a Ryan Poles thing. That predates his arrival. So I think you're banking on Dio really kind of coming into his own and being the kind of guy that he's gonna go out and earn that. What's he at, like $16 million a year, I think, that they signed him to. You're hoping that Austin Booker can step up. I just think the idea that they would get Trey Hendrickson in a trade from Cincinnati seems completely unrealistic. If the Bengals are asking for a one, no. And even if the price is like a second round pick and change, I think that's a no. Like, where it just doesn't make sense when you've got a very, very high paid edge rusher, Montez Sweat, and a guy that you made one of the bigger moves of your offseason in Dio, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. Also, as you mentioned, you know, Austin Booker, you know, this is it for Dominique Robinson, right? You got to do something this year or the dream is over.
And the other thing people need to keep in mind on Trey Hendrickson is the and he's been fantastic. And you want to talk about a genius move by the Bengals to originally get him in free agency after he started his career in New Orleans. The list of guys that get top-tier money with their third contract, and then it turns out to be, that was great move by the team. That was great for the team. It was a win-win. Like, that's a pretty skinny list, I think, guys. Like, when that guy in that third contract is at or near the top of the pay scale at his position, a lot of times I think the team ends up being let down.
Good stuff,
great
Brad.
Great stuff, Big Z. Thank you, buddy.
Have a good day.
Have a great day, guys.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs. He's the football man of the Chicago Tribune. A lot there, a lot on the bone. Really looking forward to this year. Should be a lot of fun. And we'll get more information coming out of that today, hopefully.
Maybe.
Well, and we'll get less information than we want coming out of that today.
Definitely.
312-644-6767 is Mully and Hawn's score.
I mean, if the Bengals are asking for a one, no.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Well, I don't know.
Well, Trey Hendrickson would be too expensive in terms of draft capital and as well as the resources you're allocating your defensive line, specifically the edge rusher position. It would be your third edge rusher. Now, I think Trey Hendrickson is as good as it gets when it comes to guys you can depend on to get to the quarterback. 35 sacks over the last 2 years makes that a reasonable statement. But you also went out and your highest paid free agent this offseason was Dio Odengbo.
It's hard to believe.
And your highest paid defensive lineman is Montez Sweat. So you have two of those positions already really committed to. You're pot committed in terms of resources. It would be redundant, even though Trey Hendrickson would be a difference maker. I don't know how it would fit financially, and I don't know if it's the wisest use of your resources.
I think Dio is not a guy that's produced the big sack numbers, right? And the thinking is that he's a player that they feel is close to getting to that point.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's on the rise with in the right situation, with the right usage, that he will get home and will see like an increase of numbers. And you know, the Bears definitely need to improve the number of sacks they get as well as the number of sacks they take.
Well, it goes without saying.
If that evens out a little bit, then they're going to be a significantly better team.
Dio Odengbo is 25 years old.
Right.
Is a significant investment in the future. So it's a gamble, a calculated risk, but they believe that on the open market, that was the going rate for somebody 25 years old who already has shown with the Colts a potential to be a disruptive pass rusher. That's what you need. That's what you're trying to do. Now, as for the quarterback situation and the Caleb Williams conundrum today at Hallis Hall, we don't believe that he will be made available. We do know that there is an issue to address. I don't think it's wise for the Bears to ignore it, even though they likely will ignore any sort of reaction or advice that we may give them. Caleb Williams can do himself a favor by just getting to the microphone, being as natural as he typically has been behind the microphone and addressing this head on. The tendency at Hallis Hall to want to back off from these kinds of things and ignore them like they will go and maybe they'll go away has been a bad instinct over the years. It's systemic. They are not great at handling crises. This isn't a crisis necessarily.
No.
But it has created more attention than they probably would want.
You know, I think that they're probably, like I said to you before, you know, we talked about the Foxborough, what's it called? Forged in Foxborough. Okay. So they got this special out about the New England Patriots, and they talked of Vrabel in it, and he says, hey, listen, I don't give a crap about what happened last year. He's now the new head coach. Vrabel, by the way, the co-favorite to be the NFL coach of the year. With who?
Ben Johnson.
With Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
Those two guys are the favorites, like ahead of any other NFL coaches. I think Sean Payton is like fourth or fifth on that list, which is hysterical. But, when you come into a program, the Bears had 5 wins last year. If you can turn the program around, you're going to be the coach of the year. That is the thinking of the people putting those wagers together. So similarly, he's going into New England, which was terrible last year, and he's going to get that team better. He doesn't care what happened. He doesn't care what you did last year. It's about right now. It's about what we're going to do, how we're going to do it.
So that's an interesting point, Molly, because again, regardless of what I said about Caleb Williams maybe needing to address it, if Ben Johnson takes that tack and gets to the podium before all this and says, you know what, you guys may be interested, it may have created some drama, you respect the reporter and the story, but we are moving on.
Yeah.
We are not looking back.
Right.
I could understand that too.
But I could.
And if they want to do that, fine.
But I think the problem is that aspect of the story, the idea that Caleb Williams didn't want to go to Chicago because that's where quarterbacks go to die, all that stuff is changed by the hiring of Ben Johnson. So that is one aspect of the story. The other part of the story is the idea that, you know, he was just left sitting by himself in a room and told to go break down tape. Ben Johnson can't address that.
Well, that's all Russell, but it has been addressed. He's here because of that.
Well, I know it.
In large part.
I know that, but I think that, and again, you've said it very well. you've got to know what context that was mentioned in. And that's why Caleb needs to address that part of the story.
Fair enough. I do agree with that.
And,
yeah.
And I think, David, that a part of the interesting aspect of that story is if he feels like he came in and he didn't really get any help, and what am I supposed to look at or how am I supposed to watch it, that they didn't aid him in that. That could be, and it has already been suggested that that's excuse making. That if you needed help, why didn't you raise a hand? Hey, someone tell me what I need to watch here. You're in charge. Come over here. Let's watch tape together. He could have done that. Or, you know, the very fact that if he indeed did complain about it, and we don't even know if he was the one. We don't know if he said something to his dad or his dad said something to the We have no idea what the story is. But it's a different story than the I don't want to go to Chicago story.
They're two very different things. The two separate things. The range of conclusions that we can jump to is why I think it does require him to provide the context that's missing. And that's the only reason, the most compelling reason, why he might feel the need to address it. He doesn't have to address it, but I think it would be in his best interest. It would just go away. And a lot of this is, you know, non-productive stuff. And a lot of this is redundant stuff. I don't have any interest. I don't have any interest in relitigating the Matt Eberflus, Shane Waldron era. I don't have any interest. It's very limited in what happened before the draft, before this all happened. Here's what I'm interested in. If Ben Johnson believes that Caleb Williams is capable of committing himself to being the type of professional necessary to be a franchise quarterback, and if Ben Johnson has seen things already in Caleb Williams in terms of talking to people around the building, in terms of talking to Caleb Williams himself, and if he is convinced or if he is concerned about anything about his work habits, his approach, his commitment level.
That to me is the crux of what we're talking
about. That's all we're talking about. That's all that matters.
Is Caleb the kind of guy that is going to be watching tape all night long, all morning, no matter what? He's going to put it, you know, back in the day, I just remember talking to a friend of mine about what was going on when John Gruden was in Oakland, and he and his quarterback, Rich Gannon,
they used to race each other to the building.
They would have a contest of who could be in the building longer and who could break down more tape and who could work harder. And they found success because the two guys were trying to outdo themselves working. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. That's what you want to hear. You don't want to hear that this guy's by himself and no one will help him watch tape. You want proactive. You want, I'm a hardworking guy. Why aren't you working harder? That's all I'm
saying. Reputations matter.
And we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know that's not the case. We don't know anything about it. But I do think that you're onto it. If there is a suspicion of any kind that the quarterback's a young guy who's had nothing but success and he's landed here and he hasn't put in the same, and I'm not suggesting this is the case, but this is the conclusion some people
suggesting that they need to probably make sure that he is doing everything that you want him to do to establish himself as a respected leader.
Beyond everything you want him to do.
Yes, Molly, because we have been consistent with one thing, and everybody understands this, whether it's Olin Krutz pointing this out or everyone understanding how an NFL operation and organization works. When Caleb Williams walked into the building for the first time, he became the de facto CEO of the Chicago Bears. And as that person, whether he was ready for it or not, he's 22 years old, now he's 23.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how ready you are for the opportunity, because it's a great opportunity. You now have to seize it. Now you have to do it. Now you have to show that you are ready for all that comes with that responsibility. And it is a responsibility. It may be unfair to hold him to that standard, but Caleb Williams' quarterback is actually Caleb Williams' leader. And there's a difference. It's not just his ability to play quarterback and be accurate and do all the footwork and call all the plays. He's got to be a leader in that locker room, in the community, and in that organization. And I think those are the kinds of questions that are harder to answer when you have things like this looming, which is why I would address it if I were him.
And the old adage in the NFL about younger players, anybody that's just coming in, young players, is that You don't know what you don't know. I'd say that all the time. Well, the guy, he just doesn't know what he doesn't know. So Ben Johnson, his job now is to teach him what he doesn't know. If there are any gaps and anything that he's not doing and doesn't understand, this is the guy that's got to be, you know, he has to be front and center in making sure, you know, you want Caleb Williams to be the voted on captain of the Bears by all the players around him. Does he have that sort of gravitas from all the guys around him? Now, well, you know, half your quarter of the team's going to hate him because he's the quarterback. A quarter of the team's going to love him because he's the quarterback. How do you deal with the rest of those guys?
Not equivalent of what you're saying, but I think the word we use a lot is gravitas. Gravitas implies you walk into a room and there's a presence, there's an aura even. But I think the word that might be even more appropriate and necessary here is respect. You can have gravitas without necessarily having respect, because you do create a stir when you go anywhere and you are a guy who gets a lot of attention and commands the room. That's Caleb Williams. What Caleb Williams needs now is to make sure that he has his teammates' respect.
How do you get that?
By showing up early and staying late. By being the guy.
Rear end.
By working harder than anybody in the building. By showing a commitment level that is commensurate with being the professional. By being the franchise quarterback in every way conceivable. That means showing up at OTAs. That means showing up in the film room. That means showing up at team functions. That means showing up wherever you're asked to show up. That's how you gain respect. And I think that's what Caleb Williams this offseason, if there's one thing, there's many things, but there's a big thing that I think you wonder about is that, because we didn't see that obvious and instant with his teammates last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, Ben Johnson will bring that forward, and he will be, you know, he should be able to fill in any blanks or any, he should be able to explain exactly what you have to have and how you have to have it. I'm not sure the people that were here before understood that.
I don't think so. I don't think they did.
So
they were awkward communicators. Yeah. They were very odd collaborators, and it wasn't a great fit.
Yeah, it's a different situation now. All right, 312-644-6767.
Did you see what Luis Robert said about being traded?
Yeah, I did.
You want to talk about that when we come back?
It didn't do much for me, but I'm happy to talk.
Talk
about
White Sox.
Mully and Hall on the score.
I think right now, as my season is going, I don't think anybody is going to take a chance on me. You know, I just focus on, you know, in trying to get better. I can't think of anything else.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Oh, my goodness gracious. That is a very difficult thing to hear. That is Luis Robert sort of admitting that he's done nothing worthy of being traded anywhere.
That was pretty honest admission by him.
I don't know that I want honesty. I just want improvement.
You want improvement. You got to see improvement. And yesterday was a good day for the White Sox. They won 1-0. Adrian Hauser signed in the afternoon, starring at night, and he came through for the White Sox. One of the most impressive victories of the year.
Okay, I got to stop you.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, that's not impressive that you sign a guy off the street and he does a great job and you win a game. They didn't do anything offensive. They scored one run thanks to
they manufactured a run.
They manufactured a run thanks to Madroff.
Yep.
They didn't do anything else in that game. And like, that can't be their best win of the year if they did nothing and a guy walked in off the street and managed to win a game. You know what I'm saying?
But they didn't lose it.
That might have been their flukiest win of the year.
They probably. They didn't lose it, though. And a team that had been giving things away for the week.
Yeah, wasn't
the
just
fact
handing,
that they were able to protect it and need a closer after we had said, why do they need a closer? And Jordan Leisure comes in and does the job in the ninth inning. I understand. Yeah, I think
Cam Boozer did the job, too.
Cam Boozer was a good hold.
He was the guy
good
that
hold.
He gave up the grand slam to lose the game the night before, and he actually faced the same guy, and he didn't give up a
good
grand slam.
Good for Cam Boozer.
Right?
Okay, so I'll stand corrected. I won't say.
I'm not trying to be mean about it. It's just that was about as fluky. Thank God for the rain.
Thank goodness for the rain.
Delay.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Seattle was a little bit tired, maybe a bit disinterested, whatever it was. They're a first-place team, though.
Do you know what they needed? Starbucks. Because they're from Seattle.
Yeah, they need some Starbucks.
There's a Starbucks in your hardware store in Seattle.
Definitely.
There's Starbucks inside your Starbucks.
They looked like they were a little bit listless. Yeah, lethargic even. But back to Luis Robert Jr.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I think when you look at him, what happened? He's got a 182 batting average. His OPS is 578. Only five home runs. Goodness sake, that's a good week for Seiya Suzuki. That is really somebody who has fallen off a cliff potential-wise, and I just don't know what the market will be for the White Sox and if they're going to be able to trade him as everybody assumes.
I think it's a worthy question. They'll be able to trade him because the guy can play some defense and he can run, but that's all he can do right now. And if you're a team and you're just looking to pick up a piece, yeah, okay, we'll take that guy. It's not like he can't play in Major League Baseball, but I don't think they'll be given anything. The rumor was they wanted two prospects for him. They're not going to get.
They're not getting two.
They're not getting one. You might get two scratchers, just a couple of
two scratch offs, lottery tickets, class A.
Maybe
prospects.
You're going to win. Look at this. Oh my gosh, we got him. Maybe it's going to be, you know, a great payoff eventually, but more than likely it's a
so they held
player.
On to him too long.
I think I don't know what's going wrong with him. They can't seem to fix him. They can't seem to get through to him. I don't know how motivated he is. I mean, the ball bounced off his glove during one of the games against the Cubs. You just don't see that. He used to be able to do that without
even
thinking.
He would catch those balls before,
yeah,
or so it seemed. He's 27 years old.
It's hard to believe.
He's only 27. He has had.
But you should be at your best at 27. Shouldn't you be in the
prime? He should be entering his prime,
yes,
right now. And he looked like he's going the other direction. And you wonder if he would benefit from a change of scenery. And you also wonder how this speculation, which is constant, and I'm sure that it has to affect him in some way. He is not rising to the occasion. He's doing the opposite, and he's withering.
What's Vaughn's average?
Vaughn's starting to hit a little bit, isn't he?
What's his average?
Let's find out if he is starting to hit a little bit.
He's not even hitting.
Well, he's come alive a little bit since Tim Elko came up, because Tim Elko's promotion has gotten Andrew Vaughn's attention, maybe, but Andrew Vaughn is very much like Luis Robert, disappointing. He's hitting 182 with five home runs and 19 runs batted in. He's only got 33 hits this year.
182.
Neither Andrew Vaughn nor Luis Robert Jr. are hitting above 200.
But Vaughn hasn't hit forever, you know? I mean, Vaughn is terrible, and Luis Robert now terrible. He can play a little bit of defense, but that's about it, and even that now in question. I'm just saying, David, I mean, what, you know, let's hope that whatever young guys are brought up don't go off the boil.
Well, the young guys that are in contention for being brought up, guy who has gotten a lot of attention, Colson Montgomery, has been better since his return from the Camelback Spa,
right,
out in Glendale. And I think when you talk about his...
Yeah, it's so derisive.
Development, it stalled. But now, here's the problem with Colson Montgomery. I don't know that he projects any longer as a shortstop. And I don't know that he's going to be able to play third base. Where's Colson Montgomery going to play if he ends up being called up to the majors?
Well, he's a big guy to begin with, right? And he's filling out a little bit. He's going to get bigger and stronger.
Could first base be in his future?
Not if he can't hit for power.
Okay.
Not if he can't hit for power, and he can't play a corner outfield position, right? They just brought up Brooks Baldwin. You want to talk about ruining a guy? You bring up a guy who is like a utility man that can do a lot of things. You put him in a corner outfield. Of all the players this year, they kind of ruined him. And now he's back down. You know why? Because he can't hit. He can't hit for power, but he's a corner outfielder. Give me a break.
I'm sure Ozzie has thoughts on this.
Yeah, we'll talk to Ozzie next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.